The National Lead for Armed Policing says officers may have to shoot terrorists who use vehicles as weapons. Tactics may change following attacks in Westminster, Nice and Berlin. Team GB silver medalist Jermaine Mason has died in a motorbike crash. The 34-year-old was killed this morning in Jamaica. A 17-year-old racing driver is having more surgery this evening after both his legs were amputated after a high-speed crash at the weekend. More than £500,000 has been raised so far to help Billy Munger. Formula One star Jenson Button has pledged £15,000. Former soldier David Birrell lost both his legs in Afghanistan. He's since become a racing driver and is supporting Billy.
I know when I first got injured and I was lying in hospital bed, it was quite difficult. You feel like you can't go on. Life ain't over. There is light at the end of the tunnel. To start, it seemed like the light was miles away for me, but it's getting closer and closer.
And Andy Murray says losing in the third round of the Monte Carlo Masters tennis isn't the end of the world, as it was his first tournament since an elbow injury. He blew a 4-love lead in the deciding set against Spain's Albert Ramos Vinolas. That's the latest. I'm Emma Jones.
It's exactly 2 minutes past seven.
Talk Radio Europe. We are your voice in Spain.
Do you or a loved one require nursing care? Are you currently in hospital but would prefer to be at home? Care for Me Nursing Services have been pioneering leaders in home care for over 6 years. Our professional nurse managers can design a tailor-made care plan to ensure you can remain at home with the reassurance of a nursing presence. Care for Me are licensed and insured to deliver specialised nursing in homes throughout Andalusia. To book a confidential assessment, call us on 952 636 900 or visit careforme.es. Care for Me. You're in safe hands.
Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it on Anglo Info. Products and services, classifieds, what's on, how to, discussions, properties and jobs, all in English. Business owners, make sure that you're listed. Angloinfo.com. Anglo Info. Live life anywhere.
Jet back to Britain with bargain flights to the UK with Jet2.com. Make a welcome return with us and enjoy everything that's great about Britain, like high street shopping, a Sunday roast and a decent cuppa. Choose from 9 UK destinations, now including Birmingham and London Stansted from next spring. With allocated seats, a generous 22-kilo baggage allowance and our expat low fare finder, it has to be Jet2.com. Limited availability, routes vary by departure airports, booking fee may apply.
This is Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
Radio Jones. Radio Jones. Radio Jones. Presented by
Pepper Jones.
We're into the second hour of the programme, and I refer now to a headline that screamed across the Birmingham Mail, the local paper in Birmingham in the United Kingdom. Anger as University of Birmingham academic refused entry to Israel. Professor torn from his family at airport. Well, that very professor, Kamal Hawash, is with me now. He's an engineering lecturer, a professor at the University of Birmingham. And Professor Hawash, I'm very delighted to welcome you to the programme today.
Thank you very much indeed, Pippa. Thanks for your interest in the story.
Well, it's quite remarkable, actually. I mean, first of all, let's get a bit of a background here. You are of Palestinian heritage.
That's correct, yes. So both of my parents were born in Jerusalem before Israel was created. And they happened to be living outside Palestine when Israel finally occupied the West Bank, and so they've never been able to go back and live there. And so they spent most, well, all of their really adult life outside Palestine.
You were born in the United Kingdom?
I was born in Saudi Arabia, where my parents were based, where my father was working. And I came to the United Kingdom as a 15-year-old young lad. I was put on a plane to come and get an education, which I did. And I then was fortunate enough to become an academic at a world-class university, the University of Birmingham, And I've been at that university for the past 27, 28 years.
And you're a very seriously respected academic, I have to say, as well. I've done a little research into you, and you really are at the top of your game, if that's the right way to refer to an engineering academic. But nevertheless, your parents then lived the rest of their time in Saudi Arabia?
Well, in fact, they joined me here in the UK about 15, 20 years ago. My father's passed away, so he's actually, when he died, we weren't able to bury him in Jerusalem, so where he would have liked to have been buried, so he's buried here in Birmingham. My mother lives here in Birmingham, and this is quite an important story to tell, that my mother, who was born in Jerusalem, cannot go back to live in Jerusalem because she is Palestinian, whereas a Jewish lady of her age, with no connections to that land, can get on a plane tomorrow morning just because she's Jewish, and she can go to Israel and be given citizenship, a life, and so on. That is the injustice that we face as Palestinians.
That is important to outline, and certainly from the point of view of the story of what you're about to tell us happened to you and your family recently, we must be clear about why you had become yourself so passionately involved in the, shall we say, the promotion of a positive way of thinking about the Palestinian cause. Because you as a child grew up with two parents who clearly had suffered greatly by not being able to carry out the lives that they wanted to live and having been compromised in that way. And that's going to affect any child, isn't it?
Well, that, I mean, I distinctly remember, and I often tell this story, at the age of 5 in Saudi Arabia, my mother crying, and I was asking her why she was crying, and she said that Israel had occupied your grandmother. That may sound funny. That's how I remember it. What she meant was my grandmother at the time was living in Jericho, so what is referred to as the West Bank. In 1967, Israel fought a war and occupied the whole of historic Palestine, as they call it, from the river to the sea. And part of that was all of my family who lived in historic Palestine is under occupation. So, yes, as a child, I then remember her actually sewing Palestinian flags, because they were then starting to collect money to send to Palestine to help those who'd lost homes and so on. So that's what I grew up with. But then, in a way, the next memory I had was when the Palestinian leader, Yasser Arafat, and Yitzhak Rabin shook hands at the White House in 1993, when they agreed on something called the Oslo Accord, which seemed to be a way of actually finally Palestinians and Israelis coming to a peaceful resolution to the conflict. So I was quite pleased. I thought, okay, this marks the end of it. But it actually wasn't, because, in fact, Israel has an insatiable appetite for land, and it has just since continued to take as much land from the Palestinians that is in what the world community recognizes as illegally occupied land, to build on it, to move its own Jewish citizens into what are only Jewish towns. I mean, imagine if in any country you only built houses and cities and towns for one kind of person. In this particular case, Israeli Jews, because Palestinians aren't allowed to live in these areas. So all of this, I began to find really quite the inequity of it, the injustice was just, quite striking, really. I happen to be Palestinian, but I know why now people who aren't actually stand with the Palestinian people because of that injustice. So the way that then I became involved was to join the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, which one day I saw a store in the center of Birmingham with a Palestinian flag. I couldn't quite work out why they were doing it. Clearly, they were people who were passionate about justice. And that's what started my, if you like, active interest in trying to do something about the situation, very much in a peaceful manner.
Now, that active interest, let's have a look at that before we talk about how you were treated when you reached the Israeli border. That active interest has taken the form of what exactly?
Okay, so the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, I became just a member and I started to go to events, listen to speeches, information about what was happening to Palestinians. Of course, during that period, I was in contact with my family in Palestine, and I was hearing about the obstacles they had to their daily lives. And then I decided to, if you like, apply to be elected to the executive committee, and I was of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. And then I was elected as vice chair of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign for about 8 years. And that is the primary, if you like, campaigning organization that shows solidarity with the Palestinian people. And I stood down from that role. So during that time, we would organize seminars, talks. We'd organize demonstrations if there's an attack, say, on Gaza, raise the issue with the government here in the UK, and so on. So normal solidarity work, in a way similar to what people were doing during the anti-apartheid era. People recognized there was an injustice that was happening to the indigenous blacks in South Africa, as is this injustice to the indigenous Palestinians in historic Palestine. So that was my involvement. And in January of this year, I decided just to stand down as vice chair of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, ironically to spend more time with my family, because I have a young son. And then this happened.
Let me just ask about your wife. You have a five-year-old son, and your wife. Sure. Your wife's nationality is?
She is stateless, because when she is from Jerusalem, her family has lived, as mine has, in Jerusalem for centuries. We are the indigenous population in East Jerusalem, certainly, and I'm not denying that Jews lived in Jerusalem, in case any of your listeners think I'm trying to hide facts.
Yeah.
But so she, when Israel occupied East Jerusalem in 1967, it gave the citizens, the Palestinians in East Jerusalem, identity cards which said they were residents. Residency card. Just again, imagine you're in your homeland and you have a card which says you are a resident in Jerusalem, not someone who has an absolute right to be there. And she has that ID card. It's normally referred to as the blue ID card, because Israel has different color ID cards for different Palestinians, as it happens. So that entitles her to live in Jerusalem, providing she can show that she actively lived there. We got married in 2010, and then she came to live with me in the UK. But she goes back regularly to see her family. She still has her mother and brothers in East Jerusalem, as well as a big extended family in that area. And so she goes, and I go with her regularly as well. I go at least once a year, or have done since 2010.
Not anymore, you don't, because on the 7th of April... you actually travelled there with your wife and your son to spend Easter with family and friends in East Jerusalem. Tell us what happened.
Yes, so in fact, ironically, this was a postponed visit. We were due to go at Christmas, and we got to the airport, but we weren't allowed to fly because my son didn't have 6 months left in his passport, which we hadn't noticed. So very quickly, I reorganised this for April the 7th. So... We flew out via Brussels. It's just a route from Birmingham. So we changed flight planes in Brussels, got to Tel Aviv to passport control, and within about a couple of minutes, there was effectively an attack on my shoulder. Come with me, please. An officer there asked me to go with him. They told my wife and son they could go through, and I said, no, we'll wait together. So they sat in what is a notorious waiting room that many people have sat in at Tel Aviv Airport. I was taken away. I was just asked questions about why I was there, going in and so on, and then quickly sent back to the waiting room. And then the second officer took me in, and his questioning very quickly turned to my political work. And I've never ever before this time been asked about my political work. Even though anyone who Googles my name will find that there's a lot of stuff that I've published or contributed to and so on. Yeah. So after asking me why I was going, and I explained this, it was a family visit as we do normally, then he just basically said, we have a problem with you. And I said, oh dear, what's that then? And he he said to me, have you heard about the new law that was passed, which prohibits people who support the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement against Israel? And I said, yes. I mean, as always, I'm always honest and open, so I just answered all his questions quite openly and honestly. Then he said, are you involved in any organization that is anti-Israel? I said, well, if you're referring to the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, that's a pro-Palestinian organization. And if it's anti-anything, it's anti-Israeli policy, not anti-Israel. Mm. And then the discussion went on from there, but I quickly realized that there was a very good chance that they weren't going to let me in. He then started reading, supposedly, from some of my tweets. I'm very active on Twitter. But interestingly, the tweets that he was reading from were in Hebrew. So he was asking me to confirm things, and I said I couldn't because that wasn't in English. Show me the English version, and I'll confirm it. And then he sort of alleged that I had been saying that those Israel considers to be terrorists, I've considered to be martyrs. I said, again, show me the tweet if that's what you're saying. And he didn't have it in English, so he didn't. And then we had an interesting discussion for about 20 minutes about the situation. The sort of discussion, actually, by stopping me from going in, won't happen between myself and Israelis, but that's an important byproduct of this. So he then handed me a letter which said I was going to be denied entry, and had then the temerity to ask me if my wife would go in to see her family or stay with me and go back to Birmingham. Of course, I was never going to suggest to her that she doesn't see her family, so she went in with my son in tears. She couldn't believe it. She was shocked, and she said to people in the room, she said, how can they stop us from going into our homeland? And that's really the fundamental question that people who don't understand the Palestinian situation cannot understand. Here you have a regime that was created in your homeland, whether you come from England, Wales, Spain, or whatever. People who came from other parts of the world took your land over, now stop you from going to your homeland and to see your family. And that is what is really quite... what makes people angry, including the headline, I think, in the Birmingham Mail. And especially because my work has always been for peace, including supporting the boycott and divestment sanctions movement. It's a peaceful movement that I have supported because we find that the Israeli government, left to its own accord, will gobble up more land, make life more difficult for the Palestinians, and we need to exert pressure on it through peaceful means.
It does seem inevitable that for Israel to continue to exist and grow, there in the Israeli policy theory of it, that there will inevitably be less place for Palestinians. That's it. You know, it seems that is a fait accompli, that the land will be...
That's right. They talk about the demography and the geography, and that they want as much of the geography, i.e. the land... With a little of the demography, i.e. people, which is quite a horrendous sort of concept. And in fact, you know, they talk about the demographic threat, i.e. babies being born to Palestinians are a demographic threat. It's a horrendous way of thinking when you are talking about the people you supposedly claim, and falsely so, that you want to have peace with. How can you call children being born, whether it's in Gaza or in Jerusalem or whatever, a demographic threat because they keep counting the numbers. You know, oh dear, the Palestinians are going to exceed the Jewish Israelis. Well, so what? You're a human being. You would never think of that in another country. But that is the mentality specific to Israel, unfortunately.
You've been very clear to outline that as part of the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign, you are pro-Palestinian and anti-Israeli policy, not anti-Israel. Now, this is a very important fact and part of this discussion, because there, once again, you had a suggestion that you were anti-Israel or anti-Israeli rather than anti-Israel's government.
Yes, I mean, it is the Israeli government policy that has led us to where we are now. Whether it is taking more land, whether it is building illegally, whether it's demolishing Palestinian homes, whether it is, throwing people out of their homes, it is Israeli government policy. I have no problem with the people because Just like I exist here in the UK, I don't ask who lives next door, whether they're Jewish, Christian, or whatever. It should be the same in around the world. But Israel seems to think it has a monopoly on morality, that it thinks what it does is moral, creating towns for Jews only. Where did that happen and be accepted? It is sheer racism. But it is government policy, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. And it is also this government policy that has decided to ban me from going to my homeland. It decided to ban Hugh Lanning, our chair, before me, about 2 weeks before me, from going in to show solidarity with the Palestinian people. And indeed, a couple of days after my ban, they stopped a Palestinian from Chile, who is also Christian, from going in. He happens to head the Palestinian community in Chile. They banned him from going in to celebrate Easter and to meet other Palestinians. So it is Israeli policies that we have a problem with. And they really have to change if we're going to have peace. You cannot do this to the people, incite hatred by treating the people you occupy like this and expect them to take it without any action. And my action is the peaceful action of supporting the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement to say to Israel, please stop. What the road you're going along will take us to disaster, will take us to more violence, and we're not prepared as Palestinians to accept being asked to be a model occupied people who just say, oh, you are our occupiers, that's fine, thanks very much indeed, please carry on. That's not going to happen. We want our rights, and we also want the world to support us in achieving our rights by action, not by words. There are lots of condemnations in Israel, but there are no actions. And this year in particular, you've just been talking about the Balfour, the Russian Revolution in 1917. Well, that also coincides.
Yeah.
In 1917, the British government promised to give our homeland to the Zionist movement without asking either Jews around the world or the Palestinians whether that was okay. And this year, Britain, instead of saying to Israel, you must end your occupation, you must come to your senses, has promised to celebrate this horrendous promise to the Zionist movement, which not only resulted in 700,000 people being driven out through Zionist terror out of their homeland in 1948, it has now denied me entry to my homeland. So this catastrophe continues for us Palestinians. And, you know, we will continue to campaign until that end.
But, you know, here we have a gentleman like you, highly respected within his career, 25 years at the University of Birmingham, living and working and essentially, you know, a British citizen living and working and carrying out his life amongst British people. And the Birmingham Mail's, the tone of its headline says it all, doesn't it? Anger as University of Birmingham academic refused entry to Israel. Because more of these issues and instances highlighted means that the public becomes that little bit more aware of actually the reality of the inequality that's being meted out there. I have to be very careful with my words, but the fact is that there are more and more people turning to find out the reality of what's happening there rather than taking the party line that perhaps the major mainstream news channels would want us to believe.
Well, not only that, but actually the political parties, which is even more frightening, that they are scared of standing up to the pro-Israel lobby. I mean, just to give you a very new piece of news, that yes, on Sunday, a film about a prominent Palestinian prisoner called Marwan Barghouti was due to be screened in London. And yesterday, the theatre that was due to screen it cancelled that booking because of pressure from the pro-Israel lobby, who said that he was a murderer and so on, they shouldn't be showing this film. So it appears they want to silence completely anything that raises the plight of the Palestinians. The film was being shown because 1,500 Palestinian prisoners have gone on a hunger strike because of the way they are treated in Israeli jails. I mean, for goodness sake, if we can't raise our voice and say what the Israeli government does is unacceptable, then what do we do about other human rights abuses all around the world? And I think what is really shameful is that the British government here, and specifically, but also across Europe, these countries are not doing enough to say to Israel, unless you start behaving like a normal state, we will start to impose sanctions on you. For example, why the heck do we have Israeli goods that are made in illegal settlements coming into Europe, into our shop? They should be banned because they are sustaining the existence of these settlements on illegally taken land. And that's the sort of thing we need if we're going to begin to make progress and move towards peace.
You're an engineering lecturer, and perhaps I can ask you this question, because many pro-Israeli policy supporters would argue that whilst individuals who support the Palestinian cause want to see boycotts of Israeli goods and so on, there is a huge amount of input of Israeli technology in the everyday items that we come to use and come to feel are essential to our daily lives. What would you say to that?
Well, I don't think that's an excuse for what Israel does. The point about all of this is, if Israel were to end the occupation, to treat Palestinian citizens, its own citizens who are Palestinians, equally to Jewish citizens, allow the refugees to come back, we would have no problem. There would be no boycott movement. So don't lay the blame, I'm not saying you do, by those pro-Israelis, at the Palestinians and their supporters. Lay it at the door of Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, and his extremist government. I mean, you have members of this government who, never mind technology, talk about bombing Lebanon into the Middle Ages, who talk about, who have been banning novels in because they talk about coexistence and love between a Palestinian and a Jewish person. You know, they should be standing up to that. Otherwise, Israel will feel more emboldened, because it has become more emboldened since Donald Trump was elected. It thinks that it can do whatever it wants. And that is dangerous for all of us. It is very dangerous, because the longer this conflict continues, the more hatred there will be against Israel. And unfortunately, people will say, who is supporting it? It's the United States, it's the United Kingdom, it's Spain, it's France. Why do they support a state which does all of this? Let it come to its senses and let us have peace. Then there would be no need for boycotts of anything to do with Israel.
Professor Kamal Hawash, who is of the University of Birmingham, speaking to us about his discrimination at the Israeli border on April the 7th. Thank you so much. We wish you and your family all the very best.
Thank you very much indeed for talking to me. We'll be right back.
Hello, yes, hi. I need you to come and tow my car.
Yes, sir. Where's the vehicle located?
I don't know. That's why I need you to come and get it.
Our car insurance includes travel assistance and a GPS locator service. We'll find you wherever you break down. Call Linea Directa on 952-147-834. That's 952-147-834. Terms and conditions apply. Linea Directa. Small on price, big on service.
There are many reasons to pick up SOAR in English every week. For the last 30 years, SOAR in English has been providing all the latest news, views and information, making it essential reading for all English-speaking residents in southern Spain. It has the most effective classified section in the region, and it's the preferred media option for national and international advertising agencies for their most prestigious clients. Pick up SOAR in English every week, your free English language newspaper, the only one with audited circulation and the best read. SOAR in English, 30 years linking communities.
Expand the reach of your business free. The Marketplace is the business directory on talkradioeurope.com, promoted regularly on air to hundreds of thousands of loyal listeners. The Marketplace, fast becoming the go-to listing for all kinds of businesses, products and services, you can have your business details included for free. Click on the Marketplace tab at talkradioeurope.com and simply fill in the form to add your own listing today.
TRE.
We let our programmes do the talking.
Radio Jones. Radio Jones. Radio Jones. Presented by Pippa Jones.
Before I could sleep, find a ticket, win a lottery, scoop the pearls up from the sea, cash them in and buy you all the things you need. Every night before I rest my head, see those dollar bills go swirling at my bed. I know they're stolen, but I don't feel bad. I take that money, buy you things you never had. Jet plane, babe, get you on a high plane to a jet stream and take you through the stratosphere and check out the planet and then take you down deep where it's hot, hot in the radio, baby, then cool, cold, you feel the snow and we'll roll, train, roll, train, roll, roll, train, train. When we're dreaming, when we're dreaming, when we're dreaming, we're dreaming.
free. Now then, it's just a few minutes, well, we've got about 20 minutes till the top of the hour, and I make no excuse every week when I do my radio programme that I do at least one feature on the way we treat animals on this planet, because regular listeners will know I feel quite strongly about it. Well, here is something which I think needs to be thought about, and that is an issue which you probably have never heard of, and yet those of you who eat pork in Europe will be complicit in what we're about to talk about. Now, I have a lady on the line from Switzerland. She's part of Tierschutzbund, and that's an animal welfare foundation. Her name is Sabrina, and Sabrina, I'm delighted to welcome you to the programme this afternoon.
Hello.
Hi. Now, tell us a little bit about this issue. This is the best way to refer to it is what we're calling blood farms. Where are these blood farms?
So these blood farms are mainly located in Uruguay and Argentina. These are the biggest producers of that hormone that is then used in Europe for factory farming, to boost factory farming.
Now, we're talking here about boosting factory farming, and if my research is correct, we're talking about boosting factory farming in pork animals, those animals which are pigs, which are destined for our plates in Europe. And yet the product that is being farmed from the blood of animals in South America is not from pigs at all, is it?
No, it's not. It's the hormone is extracted from the blood of pregnant mares. So, in fact, that hormone is produced in the blood of pregnant mares from days 40 to about 130 of their pregnancy. And it is then used in Europe to improve, to stimulate and synchronize estrus in pigs and other farm animals as well, but mainly in pigs.
So this is essentially a means by which the pharmaceutical agricultural industry has managed to ensure industrial scale production of pork.
Yeah, we can say that. It's mainly used in the big farms, in the industrialized farms. It is forbidden, for example, in organic farming. In organic farms, they usually have male pigs to stimulate estrus in the females. But in the big farms, in the industrial farming of pigs, usually there are no males. So they use PMSG, that is the hormone which is called PMSG. They inject it into the sows just shortly after taking away the litter, the young ones, and to make her getting back into heat within a few days, within 1 or 2 days after taking away the babies.
So let's look at the horses here in Uruguay and Argentina, as you've suggested. These horses are actually bred for this production, this hormone production?
Part of them are bred for it, yes, because, I have to first explain that a large part of the foals are not even born. They are aborted. Because that hormone is only produced in the early pregnancy, so until day 130 of the pregnancy. After that, the foals are useless, so a lot of them are aborted manually without anesthetic. And so this is also a large issue of that production. Now, a part of the mares, they can carry to term and give birth to the foals, so to ensure a steady supply of new mares, because the mares usually they stay in the process for about 3 years. After 3 years, when they do not get pregnant anymore, they are sent to the slaughterhouse, or also there are a lot of mares that die in that process, so they die before they even achieve 3 years of production.
So during this 3 or 4 year period, these mares are kept in a constant state of pregnancy, of expectation of motherhood, I suppose, which
exactly
essentially, as human mothers know, creates a certain atmosphere within your body which allows you to start to become maternal. And when that maternal cycle is brought to an end through some accident or some inflicted situation, as you're describing to us, that's a very distressing situation for an animal, whether it be human or otherwise, to be in, to lose their baby.
Exactly. This is a very distressful situation. And moreover, the mares, they are left in the fields without any supervision. So they are left in huge fields, or also plantations, eucalyptus plantations or forest plantations, and they are left there without supervision. And many of them, well, they are manually aborted, or they have a miscarriage because of the high blood loss. And so we found a lot of dead mares, and some of them we could still see that she died from abortion. So it is very, very difficult situation for the horses to be left by themselves in this state.
Sabrina, when your organisation, along with Animal Angels, your organisation is called Tierschutzbund Zurich, Animal Welfare Foundation, and Animals Angels, Inc., which I think is an American organisation, you actually travelled to some of these blood farms.
Yes, we did. So actually, Animals Angels USA, they did investigations in the States. They tried to find out those farms in the States, which they heard they would also produce PMSG in America. But unfortunately, they were not able to localize those farms. They found farms with horses, but those farms produced serum from geldings, from male horses. And they did not find the locations of the blood farms for mares. So what we did, Tierschutzbund, well, I'm working as a project manager for Tierschutzbund Zurich and Animal Welfare Foundation here in Europe, which are sister organizations. Well, Tierschutzbund Zurich, as the name says, it's based in Switzerland, and the Animal Welfare Foundation in Germany. And we carried out the investigations in South America. And so me and my colleague, yes, we traveled several times to Uruguay and also to Argentina, where we carried out those investigations, and we visited all of the blood farms, so all of the PMSG producers in these two countries.
Let me ask you about these blood farms, and I understand they weren't often easy for you to find, in no small part because these farms are immense, they're huge. But also, is there any legislation which means that this is illegal within those countries or not?
So to answer your first question, yes, they were very difficult to find, those farms, because they are very remote, they are far away from the public eye. And, well, we didn't find any information about where they were located, so we really have to ask a lot of people to finally find those farms. And then to your second question, it is not illegal in these countries to produce PMSG, that hormone, because, in fact, no legislation exists. It is produced in a legal gray area. So when there is no legislation that prohibits it, it cannot be illegal.
What we see here then is a product coming from South America into the European farming industry, which I assume, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm assuming would not be allowed to be produced in this way in Europe.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't be allowed to be produced in this way. This way means in a way that is really, really against animal welfare standards. Like, for example, they take so much blood, they take up to 10 liters each week, once or twice a week, even depending on the farms, and to abort the foal systematically, and all of that, and also to leave mares without any veterinary supervision on large pastures or in forests, mares that are used for that production and that might suffer from anemia and a weakened immune system, and that would need strict supervision. Like, for example, in Europe, it would be asked to supervise farm animals at least once a day. and there they are just left for weeks and weeks. They're left by themselves. So no, in Europe it would not be allowed, not be possible to produce it in this quantity and under these conditions. But also in Europe, there is no legislation specific for the production of PMSG. So there is no law that defines, for example, how much blood can be taken from a pregnant mare, or how often can it be taken from a pregnant mare. And all these things are not defined in Europe neither.
This is quite a surprising at best and shocking at worst revelation of how the production of meat from one animal is actually ensuring, if you want to be, you know, particularly strong about it, the suffering of two animals. I think those people who have investigated the large scale meat industry and choose not to eat meat know that there's an immense amount of cruelty, because the scale of meat production that we see today can't be carried out empathetically, sympathetically. There's no way. And the fact is that if we're talking about pigs, these animals suffer. Perhaps people would expect that. But to then understand that not only the pigs are suffering, but actually there are horses suffering to allow those pigs to be producing meat in this way is quite shocking, you would think.
Yeah, exactly. And there is also that PMSG has side effects that are very detrimental for the pig's welfare. One of those side effects is superovulation, which means that the pig often has more piglets per litter than she has teats, so which often leads to piglets dying or even being killed if there are too many. And another side effect of PMSG is induction of puberty. So pigs get into puberty and get pregnant earlier than they naturally would. And of course, it is also very, very questionable to make pigs enter back into heat so fast after taking away the litter. They don't have the natural regeneration that you would need between two pregnancies. So it's just really speeding up the whole farming and reproduction process.
What do organizations such as yours hope to achieve by exposing something like this? Is it just about bringing the public's attention to it so that we can make informed, intelligent choices? Or is it that you hope that there can be a legalized solution to what many would say is a necessary evil if people are to eat meat?
Well, we are claiming and calling for the EU Commission to ban the import of PMSG from South America. So this would be our main goal, that the PMSG that comes from that horrible those horrible conditions of production in South America, that this is banned. Now, this is still a long way to go, I guess. So, we try to raise, as you say, public awareness to inform people about what's going on and how pig meat is related to the suffering of horses, of course. And here in Switzerland, we've had already quite a few successes. For example, the Association of Pig Breeders, they call on all their members not to use PMSG anymore, but to use, if necessary, a synthetic alternative. And also the Swiss Association of Veterinarians, they do the same. They also call on all their members to renounce using PMSG.
I think, Sabrina, it's if something can come of this, I suppose it's actually to, we understand that people who eat meat are very often animal lovers themselves, and they'll have their dog or their cat, or they love horses, but they still continue to eat meat. And yet this is perhaps a story which shows the cruelty meted out to horses and not just something that's considered a farm animal. This is quite a defining moment, isn't it, for those who eat meat, if that message can be got across, that there are issues that need perhaps to be considered.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. And I mean, there is a great public uproar. We first published the issue in Switzerland and Germany in 2015, and it was really it was picked up by a lot of media. It was on TV. It was in different newspapers, and we really had great support from our members and people. So people are really interested in that issue, and first of all shocked because nobody ever believed about such a thing being possible. Even veterinarians that used it, and so many people that used it, yeah, pig breeders, they didn't realize how it was produced, and a lot didn't even know it came from horses. So I think it's very, very important to raise public awareness. And we now have support also from the organization, the online campaign organization, AVADS, that they have already collected 1.6 million, I think, 1.6 million of signatures against the import of PMSG into the EU. And they are calling upon the EU Commission, the EU Council and the EU Parliament to stop that importation. And by the way, the EU Parliament already last year, they decided that they wanted to stop, to ban the import of PMSG, but because the Parliament cannot take such decisions or impose import bans, now it is up to the EU Council and to the EU Commission to follow that demand of the EU Parliament.
Fortunately, we do live in the age where this information can be sent around quite easily. We have the internet at our fingertips, and that's certainly how, you know, I've been able to be aware and bring you onto the airwaves today. But these petitions, which abound on social media, are very valuable, aren't they? And I think there's this petition here that you could suggest that we put our signatures to.
Exactly, they are very valuable. And we also collaborate with another online campaign organization, which is called Some of Us. Now, Some of Us, they ask the pharmaceutical companies to stop the import. So AVAS addresses the EU the EU Commission, and Some of Us addresses directly the EU, the pharmaceutical companies that import it into the EU. And they have also already have quite some success. Their first campaign was against the biggest importer, MSD Animal Health, which is part of the U.S. company Merck Animal Health. And after that campaign made so much pressure on them, the company decided to supply the EU market with European PMSG. But, and that's the point, there is a big but, they still buy PMSG in Uruguay, but they sell it in the rest of the world. So they sell it in South America, in North America, and in Asia, but no longer in Europe, no longer in the EU. It is a first step, but we have to continue making pressure on MSD to fully stop break all ties with these platforms in South America. And now the second company that Some of Us tries to convince to stop importing PMSG is a German company, IDT. And just yesterday we had a kind of protest action at
the
IDT.
This is Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
We're ATA in Spain, your local accountants and tax advisors. And like you, we understand that your business is your livelihood, so don't leave it too late to get expert advice. Our team at ATA specialize in accounting, legal and business management services, and we can help with tax matters, bookkeeping, payroll, self-employment, company formation, business plans and non-resident tax issues. Call us on 951-607-006 or go online to ataspain.com. ATA Spain. Allow us to put our experience to your advantage.
The first time we went to Spain, I was outside at night and suddenly I saw these lights bobbing around all around me.
I came out and you said...
I said, Steve, I've just seen fairies all around me.
And I said, you daft thing, they're fireflies.
And ever since then, we've saved up.
And now we've transferred the money, we've done it.
We're going to live amongst the fairies.
For a fair exchange rate when sending money abroad, like buying a dream house, go to currencyfair.com.
Another
high print job has landed in your hands on time.
Over 95% of our jobs are delivered to you on time or faster. At iPrint, you get priority printing and you can reserve a seat with one of our designers absolutely free. We won't charge you to pay by credit card. The price we quote is the price you pay. For all your print, expo, sign, display and design needs, visit us in one of our offices in Cavapino or Nueva Andalusia or call 951-310-395.
Thank you for choosing iPrint, your one-stop print shop on the Costa del Sol.
There are many reasons to pick up SOAR in English every week. For the last 30 years, SOAR in English has been providing all the latest news, views and information, making it essential reading for all English-speaking residents in southern Spain. It has the most effective classified section in the region, and it's the preferred media option for national and international advertising agencies for their most prestigious clients. Pick up SOAR in English every week, your free English language newspaper, the only one with audited circulation and the best read. SOAR in English, 30 years linking communities.
TRE.
Radio Jones. Radio Jones. Presented by Pippa Jones.
It has been Radio Jones. I must apologise for the slight cut-off there at the end of my last guest. We just ran out of time. There's a few sponsors from our adverts from our sponsors to get through. That's it. It's the end of today's programme. And I wish you all a very good day. Take good care.
On the Hour. News that matters to you.
TRE. Talk Radio Europe. Your voice in Spain.
From the Sky News Centre at 7, Theresa May has restated her commitment to cutting annual net migration to the tens of thousands. There has been speculation the target could be ditched after the Culture Secretary Karen Bradley said immigration policy was not about numbers. But out on the campaign trail, the Prime Minister cleared things up.
We want to see sustainable net migration in this country. I believe that sustainable net migration is in the tens of thousands. Leaving the European Union enables us to control our borders in relation to people coming from the EU, as well as those who are coming from outside the EU.
Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn has accused the Conservatives of being morally bankrupt in his first election campaign speech. Former UKIP leader Nigel Farage says he won't be running to become an MP in June's general election. He's written an article for The Telegraph saying he'll carry on focusing on Brexit as an MEP. A couple are facing jail over the death of their premature baby, who was found lifeless on a bus in London last September.